It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown creature.
Beautiful people, Unknown Preacher LA season 4, episode 132. It's your boy LA, aka Lonzo, and my friend, my sister, Tatiana. What's happening to you? What?
You trying to be inclusive?
Yeah.
You trying to be excellent and inclusive?
Exactly. Some may not understand that, but yeah, sister, to those who are sisters, sister, you're one and the same, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't get to say Happy New Year on the show, so I'm saying it to you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yes, yes. Hey, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Well, I will say coincidentally that I have been working out this week, but it's not really a New Year's resolution. It's a New Year's coincidence. Mm-hmm. I ordered something on my FSA and then it got, hold on, let me get this child.
Michael.
Okay, Quincy, baby. I ordered something on my FSA and with my order, you know how sometimes you order stuff, they give you free trials of things?
Yeah.
Usually I ignore it, but this time it was a free trial to this app where you can go and try various different classes around town, fitness classes. So I did. I did CrossFit on Monday. Uh-huh. I did yoga stretch on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I did... What did I do on Wednesday, Micah? I don't remember. On Thursday, I went to the walking track, and today I did a strength training. Oh, Wednesday I did cardio. Uh-huh. And I did strength training today. But that's actually, yes, a New Year's coincidence. My actual New Year's resolution, following up on something I said on the show before, uh-huh, is I'm going to be prioritizing friends less.
Wow.
And putting, wow, and putting family higher priority.
I like it, though.
Because I don't appreciate people, how they was behaving about my birthday, and I'm like, we're not friends anymore. You're downgraded to an associate.
Oh, no, I will not comment on that. I get it. I'll just say that, man.
I started to send you a long audio message about it, because I talked to somebody about it, and she was like, no, you're totally validated. And we don't got time to talk about that on air. But yeah. I'm going to send you a long audio message about it.
Hey, I actually think I know where you're going with it. And that's why I say I hear you, man. And I will say this, like, being more intentional of who I invest my time in, because time is so valuable. The older you get, the more valuable it is. And so I'm, like, really being strategic now, because last year I loved – a lot of things that happen a lot, and I won't get into it, but I just have to be more strategic and thoughtful about who gets that time. So I'm right there with you. I know some people might say it, that it just, what I want to say, like, New Year's resolutions may not necessarily align with Christianity, but you know, and I'm wanting to put it out there because I know how some people will respond, but I'm going to say what mine is, to be a lot more intentional about leading souls, in addition to what I just said about pouring into people. And I just really feel energized about everything that we're going to do, including the podcast, including season 5. I'm really excited about the street ministry outreach. I want to do a whole lot more of that. Kelsey Fenton was on the show maybe a month or so ago. She and I met a lot about doing a concert in the street. I love it. I love the idea. And then just, you know, again, just really being more energized and intentional, strategic. So,
first of all, please explain to me why New Year's resolutions are not Christian. And second of all, I would like to actually tell you what you need to have as your New Year's resolution.
You want to tell me?
Yeah, what you need
what
to
you want to go for? Okay, what do you want me to do first?
I need you to stop running. Now, you don't never turn your camera on, but if you need, you got a big old Band-Aid on your head. You need to quit that running.
I see it last week. I had an accident. So, yeah, I've heard so many jokes all week, you know, so. Blink twice if you're, you know, in a domestic relationship or, oh, no. You know, tell me or can I sign your Band-Aid like a cast? And I mean, I've heard it all week.
How can I sign your Band-Aid?
But you know, I'm not going to stop that. But
that's hilarious.
I'll be more careful. I'll be more careful. And what was the other thing you said?
Why is it not Christian to have a New Year's resolution?
Well, I'm not going to say it's not Christian.
Why would people think that?
Well, I think, we talked about those holidays a few months ago, right? Well, a month ago before Christmas. And I think some people will see it as a secular practice and they don't want to mix faith with those practices. They're going to point and say, hey, it didn't originate from the Bible. You know, there's nothing about New Year's resolutions in the Bible. And then some will say that every day should be a chance to be saved or repent versus it gives the impression. And I'm just telling you, this is how some people I've had those conversations. You shouldn't wait to January 1st to say, hey, I'm going to get right with God. But that's not what people are doing, you know? So, well, I'll say the last one, the reliance on self versus God, because, you know, you're saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do. It's implied I'm doing this without asking God for direction in it. But
faith without works was dead. What happened to that?
Huh?
I thought faith without works was dead. You got to have some kind of role.
I agree with you. That's why I brought up New Year's resolutions.
Oh, yeah. I'm just telling you. I'm not arguing with you. Other people would say, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, when I said things, I'm always thinking up because, and we're going to talk about it a little later too, about just the divide in there are two black churches in this country, maybe more, but just the way people view or believe they understand or know how God wants us to worship and honor him. So, but yeah, that's it.
New Year's, to me, a New Year's resolution is not about a holiday. Like, I think the stuff that people do on New Year's Eve and drinking the champagne is the holiday part.
That's
I think that setting up a resolution for yourself is just about new year, new times, whatever. And you can do that whenever. And I just feel like when it's a new calendar, it feels like a good time for people. I don't think that part is really about it being a holiday. I think that's just it feeling like a good time.
Yeah, I actually agree with you 100%. I'm going to, because I know we're burning for time, I really want to share two sound bites, but I'll do one. I'm going to let you decide. You want to talk about the creative sound piece that we talked about or the big controversy that's been going on?
Easy. That's easy. We can talk about that creative stuff later. and some things are timely. You got to get it while it's hot.
Yeah, that is a good point. That's why you my ride or die. I appreciate it. So, I'll just say this. I wasn't going to talk about it. And then family, friends, I think you sent me a post too. I mean,
sent you multiple.
Multiple, yeah. So everyone was like either chiming in on it, asking me what I thought. And I was like, we just have to put it on and talk about it. So it started with Pastor Jamal Bryant's wife. Does she pronounce it Kara Bryant? Is that how you pronounce it? Kerry Bryant? I'm thinking. She was wearing a skin color dress to a gala, and people lost it. Christian leaders, they spoke out against it, and Pastor Bryant responded, and he made it clear that he bought the dress for his wife. And then I want to play Pastor Wooten too, because he clapped back when Pastor Bryant made the comments. So, and I'm gonna play it, but I want to get your take first, because this is, I don't know, but
I'm taking which part?
I'm gonna play both. I'm on the whole deal. I'm gonna play both. Okay, I'm gonna play both.
There's a double standard in church when it relates to women, and it's abysmal hypocrisy. You got out of shape preachers. On modesty, but have never preached a sermon on obesity and gluttony. Our misogyny has become institutionalized and cloaked under spirituality. Today, if a man falls out at the altar, you will let him lay there. But if a woman lays out at the altar, you'll pull out more sheets than Bed Bath and Beyond. In the black church tradition, in case you did not know, in the church that you were raised in the black church that you were raised in, ushers coming down the aisle had to put their hand behind their back. That was, in fact, instituted for female ushers, so that men who were sitting on the aisle would not be attracted to look at their derriere. So they had to put their hand behind their back to block the eyes of nasty deacons who couldn't keep focus on the cross. We have placed the full responsibility of warding off temptation on women without putting a demand of sexual discipline on men. We have swallowed an Americanized rape culture. The American rape culture asked women first, what were they wearing? As if the hemline is an invitation to violation. So no correction for brothers in tight pants. No correction for brothers who got their shirts unbuttoned all the way to their belly button. No correction for brothers wearing the tight shirts even when it's wintertime. Be very clear that the Jezebel spirit is not gender specific. There are Jezebels and there is Jerrell.
I thank God that your first lady, my wife, first lady of this ministry, the first lady of this church and North Carolina Third Ecclesiastical Jurisdiction, I thank God that she dresses like a first lady. I thank God for that. The lowering of standards are amazing. A preacher presented his wife the other day, and I guess you call that a flesh-colored dress. I don't know. It's black dress and flesh color. It gives the illusion that she's not wearing anything underneath. And I heard the preacher, when he defended her dress, by saying, first of all, he bought the dress. And then he said, I want to address people who don't know anything, who haven't been anywhere, who don't know nothing.
Y'all don't like this. I need to set the record straight. I bought the dress. But insecure, jealous, petty, small-minded. People got in their feelings and set up a false barometer of holiness based off of a dress.
So I guess our objection to a man of the cloth presenting his wife in public looking like a toot.
All right, man. And now Pastor Jamal Bryant said, did he say what, nasty, dirty deacons? No, he didn't say
that words.
He said what now?
I said, I couldn't tell you his exact words.
It was something about deacons being nasty. But I'm going to start with you. What do you say?
Okay. Now, you cut it off at the end there.
Yeah, hey, it's on radio, too. If it was just podcast, it's different. Okay. Don't look at me like that.
That's man. A part of my response, though.
But we know when you say a $2, everyone can assume what that next word is, right?
Okay, well, I hope you can. It start with a W, y'all. Okay, so here's the thing. First of all, thank you for playing that clip because that's a longer clip than what I've actually heard circulating. So that was my full. That was my first time hearing that full clip.
Oh, cool.
I heard him just saying that he bought the dress and, like, you know, defending her in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to not right now. And I will say this. Based on, if I had to just make a decision on those two clips, if I was going to choose whose church to go to, I would be going to the first person's church. Now, I have actually heard, this is very interesting to me, because I've heard people critique at least two different places, critique and say that, not that there was anything wrong with the dress, which I fully agree with, actually. I want to say that as well. I saw the dress. It actually was not a really inappropriate dress. I looked at it. It really wasn't. I actually saw somebody who, like, AI'd it and was like, this is what it would look like in green. This is what it looked like in red. It's actually fine. And I saw, oh, that's what it was. The first one that I saw, it was his ex-wife saying that there was nothing wrong with the dress. I agree with that, but that he should not have said what he should not have responded to it in the pulpit.
Then
my favorite podcast, they basically said as well, like, the pulpit was not the time to say those things because we're supposed to be giving a sermon up there, not responding to things. However, when I hear that, that's a sermon. What I just heard actually was a message. He was not just giving a clap back. He was speaking about other things in our society. Like, I think that when I'm looking to somebody as a leader, we're looking for them to give us guidance about how to be, how to comport ourselves in society and how to do life in ways that are in alignment with the teachings. And I think that actually what he was giving there was a message about this behavior is not in alignment, and this is why it's not in alignment. And these are the characteristics. So I actually think that there's a lot to unpack in that. Now, could he maybe pull some more? I'm sure he probably could pull some more, you know, scripture or whatever to go with those things. And that's just a few seconds. So it's not everything he said when he was standing up there. But so there's that. Then, like, we absolutely need to have spiritual leaders who are teaching men to not operate in a rape culture society. Like, that's violence, that's deviance, that's all kind of issues that we need to, you know, that's all kind of immorality. So I actually, now that I hear that, I'm like, I don't agree with those people who said that. And when I hear this other person's clip, for you to get up there and utilize that language, and he later said, like, I'm not saying she is that, but I'm saying she looked like that. No, totally unacceptable, totally inappropriate. You're actually not comporting yourself like somebody who's leading people to get up there and now you're besmirching them. You're not actually making a statement about you. It was just, that's totally inappropriate. The fact that you had to bleep it out, you shouldn't be saying anything in the pulpit that you didn't have to bleep out, that you can't say on the radio. Okay, yeah. That's actually saying a lot. Micah, yeah. Stop. So, I just think, I wouldn't go to that second guy's church. Not based on that.
Wow, I like how you dissected it, because I was thinking on the same thing similarly. Like, there are so many pieces to just blanketly say, is blanketly a word? Just put a blanket over it and just say, I'm in agreement with this person or that person. I think that they both have parts that I can see their points in both, but the delivery, well, what do you know me? What do you think I would say to all of this?
Definitely, you always say, if it feels good to say it, don't. Yeah. And I bet Wooten felt good.
That's a good point.
He shouldn't have.
Yeah. But I always, I was having a conversation with someone last week about this, not this subject, but something similar. And, it's this big split when you talk about like holiness and grace. But they really go hand in hand, and saying holiness will get us to a place where we start appearing judgmental, and we really lean on the legalism of Christianity. And then grace is actually, I'm looking at this person, but I don't know where their heart is. And I said to both of them, I don't know where Pastor Wooten, I can't judge either one of them. I'm really on what their intentions are. But I guess for me, the biggest thing is, why are we talking about it, putting all this attention on that? Right? Like, why? Like, I understand people who you would say are non-believers being distracted by that. But when we're of faith, when we're followers of the one, then we understand that all this stuff can be a distraction. We said our goal, our mission is to lead people to Christ, right? And so I will say this, I do see where, I didn't even think about that. I'm glad you said that he could have made a sermon, Pastor Brian could have made a sermon out of it, because there was some lessons in there of accountability, double standard. I mean, I totally get it, but you could lose people when you start attacking the way, nasty deacons, and I mean, really clapping back that part, you're going to lose people. And the same with Pastor Wooten, who I have family and friends who are members, have been members of his church. And I've always heard a lot of good things about his delivery, his sermons, his wisdom. I've heard those things. But again, to your point, I love how you coined it, because you said I wouldn't follow him or go to his church. So now, regardless if it's right or wrong, based on that delivery, you lost someone who could have been a follower, right? Someone who could have heard or saw this clip, and now they're saying, okay, I'm not following him. He don't ever have to worry about me attending that church, because at the end of the day, all of it matters less than love, right? Love and helping people grow spiritually. That should be the mission. And I'll pause if you want to chime in.
You there were so many thoughts that I was having while you were saying that I can't even... I do question, though, if there is a good way that he could have delivered those thoughts.
Which is one? Wooten or Bryant?
Wooten.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a good way for you to deliver that you feel like she was dressing appropriately? Why are you minding what she wearing? They wasn't even at church.
I think there is. So it's super important to be modest. You pull that out. That's very important. But modesty is not just, hold on before you get, modesty is deeper than just appearance, though. But you could say what I said before, distractions, right? And you could argue and say people, because you don't want to lose followers. But at the same time, and I know Paul has touched on this in Romans and in Corinthians, and I know some people will say Paul can be a walking contradiction, but to me he made it clear, you know, if it offends your brother, don't do it. If you're doing something that offends your brother, don't do it. If you're not doing something, I'm mixing my words up, but if you're not doing something that will offend your brother, then you do it. And so basically he's saying you're gonna lose in game souls no matter what direction you go in. But at the end of the day, it's the heart, it's your heart condition. You know what? So there is a way to deliver that, but at the same time, that still doesn't mean that Pastor Brian or his wife are less Christian than Pastor Wooten. Does that make sense or no?
I'm so like hot right now.
Go ahead.
I'm hot. The dress was not immodest. It was not an immodest dress. It went down to the floor.
I hadn't seen the dress whole entirely. I've seen like little small clips of it, but I have not seen the. But go ahead. You said, so let me ask you this. They said skin color. So is the skin color to give an appearance of nakedness, I guess?
Don't see that.
Okay. And
especially when that person was like, this is what it would look like in green. This is what it would look like in red. Like, yeah. It does not appear, and I thought I meant to send you that video.
Not the video. You sent me a shot of it, but I only could see. I mean, it was a small photo.
A small photo.
What? It was just from like her upper body. I mean, it wasn't a full body photo you sent me.
Dress was to the floor.
Okay.
It was shaped in a heart shape at the top, but she's got no cleavage out.
Yeah.
Like. It is tan. She's lighter skin toned. Like, I don't, okay. Like, what are we talking about here? It was not, to me, it was not an immodest dress. And the fact that a former first lady, his ex-wife, said there was nothing wrong with that dress.
I got you. Okay.
It wasn't wrong with the dress. No way for you, when you're responding to this situation about this particular woman, why are you policing an outfit that's actually not even inappropriate in the first place?
Yeah,
like, I'm beyond.
So let me say this. So like when I say modest, like a distraction, you don't want people distracted. But I will say that this was a gala, not the pulpit. But to that point, you know, like Sonya will buy me tank tops and muscle shirts, and she know what that could possibly do out there. And so I'm really mindful about wearing it in the house.
First of all, she even really buy you tank tops. I don't even know if I believe that. That's A. And then B, here you go. This is what I tell people. When we first met, this man was always the guns. Look at the guns. I'm like, it's not a gun. It's not a gun. You're not hot. Calm down. You're being immodest right now, which is me. Chill.
Well, I'm modest because I don't tell people how lit I am.
So. He's not lit, people. I know y'all can't see the unknown. He wants to say unknown. It's a regular dude. This ain't no bodybuilder. Like, none of that.
I gotta lighten the mood because at the end of the day, I hear you. I'm not going to let either pull me on either side. I'm just not. And I know people get on me. Oh, you want this kumbaya? I think everyone's supposed to get along. But yeah, we can in the spirit and when we focus on what the mission is. But I definitely see what you're saying, though. I hear you. But go ahead. Keep going.
Okay, so then I would also like to say, as it relates to you, I was listening to a recent episode that was not one that I was on. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that some of your negative traits are that you can be selfish, you can be a know-it-all, you can be annoying with your little Google research. And the person who you were on with was like, it's not true. Let me be the one to tell you listeners. Yes, it is. It's true. It is true. I've known this man for a long time, for years. Yes, it is. Do not let that person fool you. Yes, it is.
right, so we got to wrap it up. I have to go now. And that was actually perfect, a perfect way to end on a higher note. But, you know, maybe we can continue this later, though.
Can we please? Because I got so much other stuff. It don't even got to, it just... I'm feeling muzzled right now, and I got more stuff to say, so we have to, and you know I had other things that I wanted to discuss that we didn't even get to, so we're going to have to finish this later.
All right, I promise you we will, guys. We have to go. I have some really important, but when we come back, the owner of the Black Farmers Hub, y'all been hearing his commercial since day one. He's also the owner of Peanut and Zell's Grocery Store. Demetrius Hunter will be there, will be here. So we see you when we see you. Thanks again, T. Much love. Happy New Year again. I appreciate you.
Happy New Year.
Proverbs 21:5 tells us, if you plan and work hard, you will have plenty. Yet for many, money feels stressful and overwhelming. If you're tired of worrying about bills and debt, there's a better way. Kira Speed, a financial coach, helps individuals and families walk in wisdom and peace with their money. And she can help you build a plan that aligns with your spiritual values and also helps you feel empowered with your money so that you can save, pay down debt, and build wealth for you and your family. Interested in learning more? Visit moneyempowered.com. to schedule your free 60-minute consultation.
Beautiful people, we are back today. We are honored to be joined by Demetrius Hunter, a farmer, entrepreneur, community builder, and guess what, y'all? My brother. Yeah, most of y'all didn't know that, but yes, Demetrius is my brother. He's the owner of the Black Farmers Hub, and y'all hear it on the show all the time. Our first sponsor. He has created a platform that dedicated to strengthening Black-owned agriculture and food systems, and the visionary behind Peanut and Zeb's Grocery Store, his second business, a business rooted in access, sustainability, and economic empowerment, right? So his work is all about farming, food justice, and ownership. And he's actually reshaping the community as it relates to what they eat and who they support. So welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, Demetrius Hunter. What's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, big bro? How you doing?
I'm good, man. So happy to have you on. Long overdue. I do want to say that I just said about the sponsorship. You were the first one to sponsor The Unknown Preacher LA, got us off to a great start. So forever grateful for that. We appreciate you, bro.
Oh, man. My pleasure and honor.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, so before we, well, let's start with this. Before you became an owner of the Black Farmers Hub, who was Demetrius Hunter, and what moments in your life most shaped the man you are today?
Oh, wow. Demetrius Hunter was a person that evolved into what I am today. But, you know, during my younger years, I was very, I would say, energetic, full of a lot of activities, some activities I shouldn't have been involved with, involved with things I probably shouldn't have been involved with. But yes, I have changed and evolved is the word I would use. It took a lot. You know, I was pretty much involved in trades such as brick masonry, which was a fellow teacher that taught you and myself, and I kind of was inspired by you going to his class and learning.
I don't know how, because I was horrible in that class.
Well, really. I was horrible too, but, you know, this him alone, like, you know, teaching young Black men how to be men.
Yeah, that's true.
That was very important to me, and that was very inspirational to me. So that was one of my first jobs as a brick mason. You know, I got out there and I was trying my best. But those older guys that had been around, they challenged me. They had me laying bricks and doing the labor. So they wanted to test my skills. And, of course it was 95 to 100 degrees out there. And I walked out. I said, oh no, not for me. But yeah, that taught me, but also my passion and my first love is learning about who we are as a people. And, I had an offer at the, city of Raleigh to become, a part of their youth program. And I worked at Shaw University. That was my very first job.
Mm-hmm.
And, I saw all the books about who we are as a people. I saw the Crisis magazine. I saw Ebony back in the 40s and 50s. I saw books about Malcolm X, Kings and Queens, all of the positive role models and positive heroes and sheroes of our people. And it said that I am different. I'm not someone who can be only in trouble, but someone who could be honored in the community, figure out how to address community needs and concerns. So that was very, very profound. And I kind of met my culture when I worked at the library at Shaw University. That was when I first met my culture.
Wow, man, that's a good story. I really didn't know all of it. I actually didn't know you were, I knew you attended Mr. Curry's class. I didn't know he actually, hired you, because when I first started, I asked him, I said, hey, can you have some work for me? And he said, we'll see how you do in the class. And I was horrible in the class, so I didn't get to work for him. So you were good enough to get a job. That says a lot, man.
Well, it wasn't his job. I got on another job, but I learned from him. And that, you know, took me, you know, him training me gave me the experience that I needed to get on a job, you know. But these older guys, they were into it, and they didn't want anybody just coming on the job. And they showed me that, like, hey, if you're really serious, you know, about this job, and we can tell if you, you don't, you know, if you don't move like you're supposed to move, we'll figure out something for you to do. And they did that. They exhausted, you know, they did everything to make me exhausted. So it was good that they did that, so I can find my own passion and what I desire in my career. So,
man, that's a good story. And then in the library, being exposed to who we are as a people, and all the beauty and what we've done in this country, that's awesome. So what got you into farming? What got you into that?
Well, so long story short, my dad, of course, our dad, and his forefathers and foremothers, they owned 40 acres in Johnston County. And, you know, he told me the story about him going on a mule and cart from Johnston County to Wake County to serve the elderly. And he would tell me to come in the truck with them and get up early in the morning and meet farmers from all over North Carolina. So we would get up around 4 or 5 in the morning, meet up with these farmers, and I saw the work that they did, and it was intriguing. You know, I saw the people that he served, the elders, the communities, the hoods that we would go in, and the need for what he did was so important. The grocery stores weren't in our community. Some people couldn't have access because they couldn't get out to the grocery store. And some people just needed somebody to check on them. So when I saw that, I said, you know what? This is something that I can do. And I can honor my dad in doing it. So that's what kind of got me going. And, you know, I started with some seeds. I just doing my first, when I bought my first home, I just, you know, kind of like cleared up the yard, threw some seeds out there, and everything just started growing.
Wow.
You know, I was so impressed, and I just started continuing to do that. So that's how I got started.
That's a great answer, man. Things I didn't know again. I remember, Dad, you know, being up in age, and you were, I think all of us, all the siblings were just really happy that you were doing that, because we knew Dad was in good hands, and you were taking the time to be with him out there, like you just said, getting up early in the morning and working. So, yeah, that part of it, but never knew you would parlay that, those experiences, and make it your own. So, I love that. So I know the answer to this. I think I do, but I still have to ask for our listeners, because for many African Americans, land is tied to both trauma and resilience, right? So what emotional weight does land ownership carry for you personally?
Well, my personal feelings and my personal, the way I deal with land is in honor and remembrance of my great-great-grandmother, Amber Turner Sanders of Johnson County. She had, like I said, 40 acres. Her and her husband, Hardy Sanders, farm. They had a big orchard, apples, plums, peaches, you know, just, you can name it. Everything that could grow as far as fruit-wise, they had it. And it was described to me as a beautiful place to be from my dad, from our dad. Wow. And, you know, reading and researching, as, again, my first passion on history, family research, that's my first passion. So I'm reading about all the things that, you know, our ancestors built, and looking at genealogical records. And I see this court document that said at 103, Aunt Amber Turner Sanders walks into a courtroom and sues a store merchant for swindling her out of her land. And when I saw that, I said, you know, this is not the first story that I've read before about, you know, black people land being taken away. I need to own. I need to figure out how to own or purchase a piece of land. I need to figure out how to grow something. And I need to give back to our ancestors who fought so hard. And was a part of that historical piece of people where people don't want to remember about enslavement and the things that we did as a people to get, you know, from enslavement to liberation. And we're still working on that, but to how to figure out how to do that, how to be liberated, how to join in with my ancestors in farming, learning our traditions, our culture, to be able to grow, you know, and that came from way, way, way back before we got here, you know. So learning that and learning from the older farmers out here, it makes a connection. It's a powerful connection with the land, you know, not just growing to make money, but growing to feed your community, growing to feed your family, and growing to feel better. You know, all the foods that are out here now, if it's not grown in a way where it's at a small rate, then a lot of pesticides and, you know, herbicides will pretty much harm you later on in life. So growing your own food, growing it organically, sustainably, is very important.
Man, that's a golden nugget moment. I know our listeners will embrace that piece of wisdom you just shared, and also it's like you're carrying the what word am I looking for, the unfinished dreams of previous generations, which is really powerful. So
I like that.
Yeah. Hey, so Tatiana told me to ask you this too. So she said she's seen many businesses go under. Wow. When someone has a good business idea, so she wants to know what lessons were learned from prior setbacks that kind of helped you make Black Farmers Hub and Peanut and Zell's grocery store a success now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say resources. Gather all the resources you can. Small businesses are at the forefront of failure in a way. You know, it's not intentional, but, you know, Walmart, the big chains, they typically can do anything they want to shut you down. Not intentionally or not directed to you as an individual, but people tend to go where the prices are less and where they can get a magnitude of things in one space.
Yeah.
So seeing a mom and pop store as it used to be is very a slim chance, because you can't hardly survive in this type of environment, whereas the big chains are winning hand over fist. So finding resources, connecting with the community, doing something for the community is what I've learned in the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. Makes your business special. Finding something that the community needs, and not a product, but a service that you can offer the community. And we offer mental health therapy on Mondays. We offer massages, free massages. We explain what the herbs and some of the produce that we have in our store, health-wise, what does it do for you? We explain that very thoroughly, and we take the time out to talk to each and every one of our customers and clients. And having those special days, we have the People's Farmers Market, where product vendors can come out and sell their stuff for very minimum. Like, they can come out for like $30 just to say, hey, I can sell my products on this property here and make a ton of money, you know, and then leave, you know, and don't have any overhead. So figuring out what the community needs are, bringing people together, supporting other small businesses, all of those things matter. And we just stay encouraged, and we keep finding the pathway. You know, it's not a blueprint out here, but every community is different, and you have to find your pathway within that community.
Man, I like that. That makes perfect sense. You know, you said when you were talking about going against the big machines, and I was about to say, well, how do you compete? How do you counter that? But you just gave us an earful, and that makes perfect sense. There are other ways. And one thing, that connectivity that you're just talking about, that the community relationship, that's it's really hard for corporations to really compete with that relationship and really knowing the people in the community you serve. That's a really good point.
And I would say also, you know, learning from my dad, he was the man. Like, really, our dad was the man. When you go out in the community, they'll tell you Zeb Hunter really knew how to treat his customers. But they
Black Farmers Hub is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays.
Come get your $25
back. Relationship and really knowing the people in the community you serve. That's a really good point.
And I would say also, you know, learning from my dad, he was the man. Like, really, our dad was the man. When you go out in the community, they'll tell you Zeb Hunter really knew how to treat his customers. But they also will tell you that he had a pen and pad, him and Mom Penny. They would go around, and anybody in the community could get whatever they desired. So let's just say an individual wanted $400 worth of produce and meats. He would write it in a book and just say, hey, this is your bill. And I can't do that, but, you know, I would love to do that, but the generation of today is a little different. So we found other avenues to help our community and be there. We will support, you know, our community in those ways. When someone doesn't have it, we will do our best to make it work for people who need food. So we have deliveries to churches. If you're a regular customer, if you come in and you don't have it this week, we work with you. So that is something I took from Dad, and, you know, I'm proud of keeping that legacy alive. It's not easy because, you know, I used to look at the pages and it was like $2,000 or $3,000 of bills left. And I'm like, I know I can't do that part, but, you know, I can do something to be a change in the community.
Wow. 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 Good stuff, man. Good stuff. And so people talk about like food deserts. I've heard that for a long time, but fewer talk about food systems. So in your view, what does power really sit in the food economy, and why has Black ownership been systematically pushed out?
Well, I mean, of course, to be clear about your question, you're asking where we are as a farmer, as Black farmers are trying to make economy their pathway.
In the economy system, where do you see us? What are your views about our Black farmers? I'm saying I'm not a farm. The leverage that Black farmers have in the food economy.
Well, I mean, we have a huge leverage. Traditionally, of course, as I said earlier, we are what built America as far as farming, agriculture. The United States made billions of dollars off of ag. And it was because of us as enslaved people working the fields for free of charge. And, you know, doing that for over 80 to 100 years. From 1865 to 1965, you know, even at thereafter, there were people still enslaved at a small amount or a small rate. But sharecropping, enslavement, even in incarceration, we're working the fields. And I say our leverage, I mean, there was a huge lawsuit two times because there was so much discriminatory practices in the agriculture USDA, there were lawsuits because land was stolen. Any type of loans that were given and attributed to farmers, they did not go to African Americans. So the United States Department of Agriculture has done something about that twice. The lawsuits, the Black farmers won the lawsuits. And, you know, that shows clearly that there was some damage, and, you know, a lot of people still have lost land that they'll never recover. Like, it's just no way possible to equate what they could have been or generationally what they have done for other farmers throughout this history of the United States. But in regards to leverage, I think that we as a people have the leverage of knowing how to grow food and grow food in a way that's organically or sustainably. And, you know, that's very, very key. And we know how to grow it when the soil loses its nutritional value, because that's where our nutrients come from, is the soil. And when you don't have the right nutrients, your soil becomes depleted. And you can't grow any more food on your soil until you amend the soil. So African Americans have always knew how to replenish the soil. And there's historically, there's been mass migrations from the European settlers that had to move from Alabama to North Carolina, which our great grandmother, Maria Warren, was part of that. She was enslaved and they moved her up here because the soil had depleted and the enslavers brought her here. But they knew that our ancestors knew how to replenish that soil and grow. So they started over and they used the skills of our people to do that. So that's a huge leverage. We keep that tradition of regeneration of the soil. We do that and we do it properly. And I'd say that that's our leverage.
Man, that's good stuff. Now, what about tell me some of the myths or if it's just one myth that people believe about black farmers or black farmer initiatives. Because I'm always hearing that there are myths associated with black farmers. So can you share at least one?
I would say the myth that most resonates to me is why does farmer, a black farmer deserve a handout is what they say it is. But for me, black farmers have been the hardest working people in the United States. I can tell you the value of my ancestor on somebody's farm that they didn't own, but they owned my ancestor who was farming. And in my census records, I can track how many ancestors farmed. And it was probably 90% of my ancestors who were farmers. So that myth of we don't have the farming ability is not true. The Glickford case where the lawsuit of discriminatory practices took place, it'll show you how much land that African Americans lost. 90 million acres, I believe, dropped down now to, I think we're at maybe 40 or 30,000 acres remaining as a black farmers.
Wow.
So when you see that large amount of depletion of land and land ownership gone, the Land Loss Prevention was created. That's an organization that was created so that we would not have to lose our land. And they called it the land loss. They call it the Land Loss Prevention because so many black farmers lost their land. And that if you don't have land, you can't farm.
That's right.
So if you're a black farmer and you've lost your land and your ancestors used to farm, that's all we can remember. Like, we don't have the actual resource anymore. And that's why I say resources are so important.
Yeah.
So that myth that black farmers just didn't know how to farm, or we don't have anything, it's not because of us. It's because of the practices of what happened in the past. And black farmers are coming back strong, I would say. And it's because of people that didn't lose the traditions decided to say, hey, don't stop farming. Farming is not embarrassing. Farming is not degrading. Farming is of hierarchy, because when you farm, you liberate yourself from anything else, because food is one of the most important necessities on this earth. And if you can't grow your food and something happens and the world is, going into chaos and you need McDonald's and McDonald's is not functioning because the system is going down or the grocery stores are completely out, what do you do?
Yeah.
And save your seeds. Save, like, when you eat, save your seeds. Grow a little bit of something here. All you need is nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium, and you can grow, So those are important keys for me, and the myths are wiped away when you can do for yourself,
Yeah. Man, you have to show me some stuff. I don't have a clue. I'm not ashamed to admit, but you're saying things I don't know anything about. But this is definitely a lesson. I appreciate that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about the emotional toll of doing this kind of work. I mean, like, I know, well, I don't know, but I imagine there are probably times when you went to just walk away and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So who checks on you when you're pointing to the community? Like,
Nobody for the last 4 years, you know, I just go into prayer and, you know, back, you know, at home, of course, you know, my wife and I, we pray and we talk. Other than that, this Mental Health Mondays was kind of a selfish thing somewhat, but it's also a community thing. But I needed a community of where we can all go to and share what's going on, like check in. Like, this is check in time on Monday, you know. So it's not just for the community. I'm getting, you know, some relief as well. And, you know, being, you know, talked to and encouraged during those hours.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Hey, can you share a story of someone whose life changed because of the Black Farmers Hub?
Sure. So we have selections of herbs and food, of course, produce. But one of the selections we have is for hyperglycemia. Mm-hmm. And this was me personally. Someone asked me, a nurse. She was a retired nurse. She said, "What do you have for someone with hyperglycemia, diabetes?" I said, "Well, we have bitter melon, we have bayberry, and we have this Palo Santo. Peleazul. It's a wood stick, but it turns green if it sits in water. And it works wonders. But the young lady, she took it. I gave her, you know, like the directions or instructions on how to take it. And she didn't come back, and I didn't get her information. Three weeks went by and I didn't see her. And I was literally just wanting to know how she was doing. She came in about a month later and I said, "Hey, how's it going? Where you been? Are you okay?" You know, she was like, "Yeah, I'm good," because she said she had a lot of issues. You know, her sugar levels were going up and she needed, you know, something to help counter it. So I said, "How are you?" She said, I'm doing great. I said, "Well, you know, I kept checking with you or kept trying to find out how to check in with you, but I didn't have your information. And I know we talked. You said you would get back with me because I gave you my number." She said, "Well, if you didn't hear back from me, that means I'm doing wonderful. And wow, what you gave me worked. My numbers are good. It's level is regulated. I'm not having any problems anymore." And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. You know, coming from a registered nurse that I'm sure she's, you know, done this work in the hospital with medication and things of that nature. But she decided to go, you know, holistic and see how that works for her. And it worked out fine. So, you know, that's one of my biggest accomplishments, hearing feedback and from clients and hearing their success stories.
I love that story. I love it, D. Hey, 10, 20 years from now, where do you see the Black Farmers Hub Peanut and Zeb's Grocery Store?
Well, I would love to see 10 to 20 years from now the store on a larger scale. Near some land, or having another satellite location where there is land and there's a possibility of people becoming educated on how to grow food, connecting with people around the country that have markets kind of like what we're doing, and supporting that in any way that we can. You know, ensuring that the community is definitely okay, and we have the needs, that we're meeting the needs of the community. So those three things are something that I would see and desire for Black Farmers Hub.
Man, this has been a pleasure, brother. I've learned a lot. You on the history, on the farming, the success stories, it goes on and on. I really appreciate you. Before we wrap up, I always do this for my guests. I roll out the red carpet. I give you the floor. You talk about anything you want to. Black Farmers Hub, Peanut and Zales Grocery Store, locations, events, number, whatever you want to do, I'm handing it to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Black Farmers Hub is located at 1409 Cross Street. That's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Not Ralea, but Raleigh. And I would say come on out. We have Monday nights, 5:30 to 7. You can get free massages, y'all. So if you're stressed out, be dealing with a lot of pain, or you just have some anxiety and you just want to relax, the massages are there. The herbal lessons are there on how to holistically heal. We have a mental health therapist. If you're feeling down, if you have some bereavement going on and you need some encouragement, or just you just want to be a part of a community, we're there for you. Then as far as the events, we have the People's Farmers Market. That is Saturdays, the first Saturday of every month, 1 to 5 o'clock. The first Saturdays of every month, the People's Farmers Market. We have food trucks. We have vendors, farmers. We have, all types of other vendors, skin and hair care products. They're out there in our space. Selling products that's good for the community. We have MLK Day. Yes. And that's a service day where we're going to make community garden beds, and we'll reveal a mural with Martin Luther King in honor of him and some other leaders. So on that day, it's very special and important to us. We'll have a former AFL-CIO speaker. We'll have a musician singing, and we'll have food. So hopefully you'll be out there for that. We have Wise Women Wednesdays, where it's specifically designated for women to have conversations, to talk about herbs, to eat healthier, to live longer. And I think, Fridays, we have Open Mic Fridays, so you can come out, share with us your thoughts, your words of wisdom through art, or just express how you feel. Open mic Fridays are really cool, time to get away from family and just hang out. I would say that's pretty much it for now, but stay tuned. We'll have more.
Man, that's a lot. You guys are doing it. And I couldn't be more proud of you. You already know that, but I'm extremely proud of everything you've done.
Appreciate it.
But, man, as always, you always have a seat at the Unknown Preacher LA.
Thank you, brother.
Man, God bless you, brother. Thank you for your service.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for putting on this platform for people to speak out and share all these stories. They are great. I've heard so many. Shout out to our sister Helen and Rodney for doing their thing. I really appreciate hearing all of them.
Amen, brother. Black Farmers Hub, Demetrius Hunter, y'all.
Yes, sir. Peace out, and thank you.
Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. It's the unknown, unknown preacher. We'll be right back. unknown.